Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Welcome aboard Jaguars Today on Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. I'm chuckling because I saw the latest tweet from Irish Jaguar that says, Prosser doesn't understand Cuba. I'm shocked. I don't know what their relationship is like, Prosser and Irish Jaguar, but there you have it. I don't know. Who understands Cuba? I don't understand what the hell is going on.
What's been going on down there.
They're apparently trying to open up, the whole lines of communication.
Baseball?
The president's there, Tony. The first time since like 1928 or something, United States president has gone to Cuba. It's not just opening up baseball. I think they're trying to maybe go a little beyond the baseball aspect.
Now, does this mean that the listening audience for Jaguars Today extends to Cuba now?
It always has.
It always has.
If they
could
get
right?
some bootleg little internet
yeah,
going
I don't know
down
how that
there.
Works down
do we
there.
Go? Do we come through on dial-up? I'm not sure how that goes.
I don't know.
Do they have dial-up? Honestly, I mean,
I'm
not
no
kidding.
Idea.
I saw Studebaker driving down the road, Tony. It's they really do live in a bit of a time bubble when you've had an embargo on your country for that long and you're an island. It's tough to get all the latest Ferraris, I think, down there in Cuba. Not too many people who can afford them, so I have no idea what's going on in Cuba, but there you have it. All right, if you want to get in today, 641-1010. Tyler did occasionally, I'll give credit for a good idea, but in the same breath, I will give a backhanded smack to him by saying that it's one of the rare ones that he's had. But he certainly came up with a good one today. We had some fantastic finishes. The Texas A&M game was absolutely ridiculous. I thought the best comeback I had ever seen in college basketball was my freshman year as an intramural legend with the Evictors. We came down from 11-point deficit with about a minute and 10 to play as Dan the Animal hit 2 out of 3 free throws with a technical thrown in late in the ball game to seal a 1-point comeback victory for the Evictors.
A technical in the intramural game.
Look.
That's not 12 points with 40 seconds, though.
It was not 12 with 40 seconds. Tony, they didn't foul.
No.
It wasn't like they were knocking down threes. They hit one or two threes in there, but they were getting just kind of circus layups
Northern
one after
Iowa
another.
Lost their inbounder to a knee injury late in the second
their
half.
Their designated inbounder.
Yeah,
it's
and
crazy.
They talked about it on the broadcast. They're like, this guy's their inbounder. This could be trouble. And then the next three inbounds, you're like, what is this guy doing? And then the kid gets caught in the corner, and he doesn't know what to do with it and tries to bounce it off the guy's leg. And just hands it to Texas A&M one more time to tie it up. It was unreal.
Were you guys watching it live? Did you actually?
No, I did not.
I turned it off with 40 seconds left.
I watched the whole thing.
Right when it got good.
It was a 12-point lead, 40 seconds left, and I left my house. I went to go do something, and I turned it off and heard it on the radio. And they said, Northern Iowa going to overtime. And I was like, what?
Well, and you would think a 12-point lead with 40 seconds left, you got to score 2 points every so many seconds. They scored 2 points like over the next 12 seconds. So with 29 seconds, they were still down 10.
Yeah.
Down 10 at that point in time. And then they got a quick 7 over the course of the next 10 seconds. And it almost became, we're going to blow them out. But went to double overtime and won. And
it was
then,
unreal.
Yeah, Wisconsin knocking off
the how could you turn
Xavier
it off with the inbounder
with the buzzer
route.
Beater?
That's
a
big-time mistake.
Key inbounder. I mean, honestly, these teams, though, it's true. Purdue doesn't have a point guard to push it up the court. They spaz out, lose a 13-point lead last week. You lose your inbounder. He keeps throwing it to a guy in the corner who's already in a trap. Like, the second he catches it, he's in a trap. And it was pretty good, though.
Everyone's so quick to use hyperbole and say, oh, that was the greatest finish ever. Well, there is a stat to say that is the largest comeback ever in the history of college basketball to win it in the final minute, ever.
Right, and certainly in that amount of time. But right, in the final minute, never has a 12-point deficit been overcome. So it was truly the greatest comeback,
absolutely,
if you want to define it that way, in college basketball history. So today we're asking you about your fantastic finishes that you've seen from the Jacksonville Jaguars over the years. We've already seen a lot of folks add to the list. The Scobie 59-yarder getting a lot of run there against the Indianapolis Colts. So share your three favorite fantastic finishes from a Jaguars perspective with us on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. We've got Johnny O going to join us live from the owner's meetings coming up in about 20 minutes or so. We'll find out what's going on that you should be aware of, some rules votes going on down there. Tony, I saw Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback column said it's expected to be as probably insignificant news week as you're going to get coming out of the owners' meetings. Not a ton going on down there. And then you see the talk last week was that Goodell was ready to give up his discipline role as the overseer of discipline. NFL pushing back against that story a little bit, saying hey, if it does come, we're going to need a significant concession. A lot of people think they're going to try to extend the current collective bargaining agreement by a few years. We'll see how that all plays out, which I think is finally starting to catch up on the player side, as you're seeing a lot more money pour into their coffers right now, and you've seen the salary cap rise and rise. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. You want to talk about how your bracket looks? You're welcome to do that a little bit here, particularly if you're in the Jaguars Today Bracket Challenge. We'll get an update from Tyler on the standings a little bit later on. I was feeling good, Tyler, on Friday night when Michigan State got knocked out. After we lost Purdue on Thursday, that was a blow. I figured, well, a lot of people had Michigan State making a run, then Xavier losing at the buzzer. Was not a good one to Wisconsin yesterday.
Right, and A&M hurt a lot of people, too, because I actually had Northern Iowa beating A&M.
Did you? I had A&M winning, so I was happy with that. I had Gonzaga in the Sweet 16. That's my one claim to fame this tournament season.
And then Xavier losing on the game-winning shot to Wisconsin.
So I'm saying right there, I believe I just mentioned that hacker a moment ago. Thank you for tuning
my
best
in. Hacker in.
Thank you for tuning in to Jaguars Today this morning. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. And we'll get it kicked off on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. Taking your calls next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
My first step was I brought in Monty Kiffin. Monty Kiffin and I, there's a deep level of trust, relationship that we have. I know he's had a track record of hiring very, very good defensive personnel. Mike Tomlin, Lovie Smith, Herm Edwards. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I just really trusted him through this whole process. So I just brought him in to ask him to sit in on these interviews more as a consultant type approach. What I told him was this is the number one objective here is to hire who is best for our organization where we're at. And if he could go about it that way, it'd be great. That was first and foremost. So Kiff came on board with that.
That's Gus Bradley, Jaguars head coach, talking about the role Monty Kiffin played as an advisor, Tony, in the defensive coordinator search. Gus could have added himself to the list if he wanted to be egotistical about the defensive minds that Monty Kiffin has hired over the years, as he was working with him as a linebackers coach back in the day when he was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Monty Kiffin had a 12-year run with the Bucs from 96 through 2008. That'd be 12 or 13 seasons. Forget it. I don't want to add them up. Off the, off the fingers. I think you're right. I think it's 13. So Monty Kiffin coming in, Tony. And look, I have no problem. Add as many good minds to the staff as possible. You just know at some point if the Jags struggle out of the gates and they have a bad game defensively, the calls will be, why is this new guy who's never done this before the defensive coordinator when you've got a guy with 50 years of coaching experience sitting there on the sidelines right next to you?
No, I'm sure that'll be something that we hear at some point this year because odds are at some point the Jags defense is going to struggle.
I was going to say, or they just have a shutout every week and
right.
they avoid that conversation.
No, odds are at some point in the first month and a half of the season, they're going to lose a game and everyone's going to blame the defense. It's probably going to happen. And when that happens, there will be some fans that are asking why Monty Kiffin isn't just the defensive coordinator. My question when I saw the email this morning was, why wasn't he on staff already? I mean, he was here during training camp last year, the year before that. He's been around the team now for basically 2 years. He hasn't been in any official coaching capacity. You just heard the cut from Gus Bradley. They sought him out to get his advice when they were searching for a new defensive coordinator, not as an interview for Monty Kiffin to be the defensive coordinator, but as a what would you be looking for if you were making this kind of move thing. So it feels like he's been a part of this for a year and a half to me already. And now he's just officially on this roster.
You know, total speculation here, but it could be a number of things. You know, last year when he comes in an advisory capacity, you have Bob Babich, who's been here for a little bit. And if you bring him in, does it upset the apple cart in terms of, you know, who the players are going to turn their focus to? Todd Wash is a brand new defensive coordinator. And I would imagine Gus Bradley is – knowing Todd Wash, knows that Todd Wash would be comfortable with this move, or Gus Bradley would not make this move, right? I mean, he's a guy that's doing it for the first time. He has worked under Monty Kiffin as well. He was on that Tampa Bay Bucs staff with Gus Bradley of Monty Kiffin's defensively down with the Buccaneers. And so, bring in as much as you can. This is a must-win season, right? And so don't leave anything out there. Maybe Monty Kiffin, Tony, to your point, didn't want to take such a high-profile role. Maybe he enjoyed just kind of being an advisor. Guys, coach for – this will be his 50th season coaching. I think 29 in the National Football League 21 collegiately. Maybe he was just like, yeah, you know, I like the advisory thing, and I don't want the pressure of having to show up to work every day. I don't know. We'll get a chance to talk to him a little bit more and make this clear as things go forward with that. By the way, I should mention, I would like to mention, anyway, kudos once again to the J Fund, putting on a fantastic event on Friday night. Hope they raised oodles and oodles of cash for what is just an absolutely great charity. It was good to see Tom Coughlin. Didn't get a chance to talk to him on Friday night, but talked to Gus for a little bit, and Dave Caldwell as well, and both, I think, very happy. You know, you're never completely satisfied if you don't bat 1,000 in free agency, but I think they're happy in terms of the overall amount of talent that they've brought to the roster. You and I haven't talked with Gus in a while on that score directly. I guess you did, but not on free agency. At the combine, you talked to him about things. So hopefully we can catch up with him sometime in the next week or so.
Yeah.
You know, we're inside 6 weeks now, man. It'll be 5 weeks from Thursday where they're convening in Chicago and at least making that first-round selection for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So we'll see where things shake out with that over the course of the next few weeks. But, you know, I think, you know, you look at the positions of need, Tony. I think still any level of the defense is a priority for the Jacksonville Jaguars. If they can find pass rush, they'll gladly take pass rush. I think they need linebackers, a couple of them in the draft. I think they are not done in the secondary as well. I think you and I probably both agree cornerback is an area that's going to be addressed at some point. Prince Amukamara is under a one-year deal here in Jacksonville. He's not the long-term answer. You know, you bring in a guy, who knows, maybe even with the fifth pick, but second round, third round, wherever, that you project to be a future starter for this football team. I don't think there's any level of the defense that's off limits. I do think Jalen Ramsey's less of a consideration with the fifth pick, unless you really believe he's going to play cornerback, because I find it hard to justify signing Tashawn Gibson to that deal at the age that he's at and then saying, well, let's draft our free safety of the future with the fifth overall pick when you have as many needs as they do. But maybe, who knows, maybe they do view him as a guy who can play cornerback at a high level in the NFL.
Yeah, not sure. And it's, again, kind of the conversation we've had before about when they bring in somebody and now they have two guys at a position, and we get calls from fans, well, why don't we trade this guy, or why don't we let this guy go now and save a little bit about that money? Well, because you're allowed to have more than one guy qualify for that position. And at a position like corner, you don't need two, you don't need three, you probably need four or five, honestly. And do they have three guys right now that you feel pretty good about? Yeah, but that's not five. You know, and I'm not saying that they're going to spend the number five overall draft pick on that position, but to think they're not still looking to address the defensive backfield, I think would be a little naive, because what do they really have behind those three guys that we're talking about right now? You're again going to Demetrius McCray, that level of guy. Or they can improve upon that in the draft at some point. I don't expect it to be at five. I don't think that they're not considering Jalen Ramsey at five because of what they've done in free agency, because I think he's a talented enough guy that if you got put in a position where that's the best player available to you, draft him. Draft him and find a way to get him on the field and improve your secondary that much more, whether it be a corner or a safety spot.
All right, let's go to the phones for the first time today and this first time this week. 641-1010 is the number. Gary is on the south side joining us here on 1010XL. What's up, Gary? How are you?
Good morning. First, I'd like to say I'm proud of what the Dolphins have done, having Donna Ponte, a woman in the front office, as well as two African-Americans, Chris Greer as the GM and Vance Joseph as the defensive coordinator, because I'm tired of the same guys being retread all the time and new guys getting an opportunity. I'm just proud how progressive they are as a football organization. Caldwell, Dave Caldwell, why doesn't he bring in not even guys like Laurinaitis or Long, guys to look at? And how safe is he if the Jags go through a 5-11, 6-10 season? Is Gus the only one, John in jeopardy, or is Caldwell also safe? Because changing one without changing the other, to me, doesn't make sense. You either clear everybody out that's involved in losing, or, you know, like the Giants did, making Coughlin the scapegoat when it was Reese brought in the players all them years. Is Caldwell's job at all in danger? And I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Laurinaitis and Chris Long. Chris Long wanted to play for a, quote, contender. And he took hardly any money to go play in New England. He wasn't coming here. And what does James Laurinaitis give you at this stage of his career that Paul Posluszny won't give you this year? I don't know if there's that much that he gives. I don't know if it's a significant upgrade. When we talk about drafting Miles Jack, Tony, we're talking about drafting a guy who is a sideline to sideline speed guy, can cover, and is going to be here maybe for the next 10 to 12 years.
Right.
James Laurinaitis is, you know, getting up around 30 years old. How much longer is he going to play at a high level, and is he still playing at a high level? Didn't grade out very well last year. I think it's a case of they have big names. Their game doesn't match their name at this stage of their careers. Chris Long's been bad for the last 2 years. Why would they want him?
Really bad.
Right.
Like, ineffectively bad on a defensive line that may be the best in the league from a talent perspective as far as what he had pushing from the inside of that line. And on the other side with Robert Quinn, Chris Long still got basically nothing done in the last two seasons with St. Louis. And I think when you look at Laurinaitis, which would have been the stronger consideration of the two guys for me, because I don't know how much Long has left. And like you said, he was looking to go to a team like New England, which is where he wound up trying to chase a ring and rehabilitate his career, essentially, in 1 year. And the best opportunity he felt for that was going to be up in New England. Laurinaitis, how much better is he than Puz? That's the question that needs to be asked. How much better is he a middle linebacker than Paul Puz-Lesny at this point in their career? Maybe he's better, but it's marginally better if he is. So you're not going to spend the money at that position just to have two guys now that you're talking about, well, what do we want to do with either one of these guys? They're just kind of old, and now we're both on our books. It wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to bring in a guy like Laurinaitis, even if it's a name that everybody knows.
Hey, look, if the Jags go 5-10, everyone, or 5-11, everyone's jobs potentially in jeopardy.
Should be.
I do believe that Dave Caldwell, in my estimation, does have more job security than Gus Bradley. That may not be the fact in reality. I'm just saying from the way I see it through my eyes, because he did select the quarterback who does look like he's going to be the quarterback, if you know what I'm saying. And I think that does earn you a little bit more. In fact, I think I look at some, you know, a budding core of young players that Dave Caldwell selected that I'm excited about. But again, you go 4-12, 5-11, then all bets are off. I'm not expecting that. Then again, I wasn't expecting it last year. So,
And I know for me, it feels like Caldwell, I don't know if this is the way it happened behind the scenes or not, but it feels like Caldwell has basically gone to bat a little bit for Gus Bradley. And from that perspective, they feel more tied together to me.
Could be.
In that if it doesn't work with Gus, I think both of them could potentially be gone in the same offseason.
All right, let's get Terrence here on the north side before we break. Hi, Terrence, how are you?
Yes, hey, what's up, man?
What's up, man? You fall in a hole or what?
You know I work now during the day, so I can't call you.
Terrence, come on now. Schedule your breaks better.
Huh?
I'm just kidding. Go ahead, man. What's up?
Hey. Well, first of all, before I get to Monty Kiffin, can you put some Byron Leftwich highlights in your show, in the beginning of the show?
Are there? Do those exist?
Send us a few.
There are such things as Leftwich highlights. All right. We've done it. We do have. Well, because those were fantastic finishes, and that's what we went with.
You had the Leftwich to Wilford. That was a pretty good finish up in Buffalo.
We did. You're the one who put that open together big time, all right? So don't be trying to tell me. Terrence, what can we do for you from the modern-day perspective?
Hey, I like this hire with Monty Kiffin. And y'all are complaining with Todd Washington. Who cares what he thinks right now? Why didn't they make Monty Kiffin the defensive coordinator and make him their assistant?
See, here it is. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Exactly. Yeah. Didn't even take one day. Didn't take an hour. Didn't take 1 hour. And Terrence is already calling for Monty Kiffin to be the defensive coordinator. Terrence, thank you for the call. We love you. Get a better work schedule. Look, I do. I'm not saying you have to do that. I just, my guess is the way Gus Bradley runs his organization. Whether it's asking Todd Wash's permission, I don't think it's that. It's just you're giving him the heads up, like, hey, he's been around here. You know, I'm thinking about adding him to the staff. I don't think Gus Bradley's not a dictatorial guy. It's his job. It's his staff. It's his say, Tony. But we saw him bring Todd Wash into interviews with prospective defensive coordinators.
Yeah.
He keeps for his people that are with him. It's an open environment. These discussions take place. I'm not saying there's a litmus test that Todd Wash has to say, yes, thumbs up to Monty Kiffin. Monty Kiffin, as the expression goes, has forgotten more football than Todd Wash and the rest of us ever knew, right? I mean, Monty Kiffin is one of those all-timers. I would think Todd Wash is happy to have Monty Kiffin as around in an advisory capacity. Again, he's a guy he's probably very comfortable with. He worked on his staff in the past, and you're a first-time coordinator. Having a guy that's had a ton of success at this level doesn't hurt to have his ear to bend whenever you want to. Terrence, we appreciate the call. We got to take a timeout. John Osier going to join us live from the owners' meetings. Coming up next right here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, Johnny O is currently looking for his retirement pad down at Del Boca Vista. Or is that Boca Raton? Where are they? Have any owners
Boca Raton.
Oh, it's not Del Boca Vista.
No.
All right. Boca Raton is where Johnny O is sunning himself this very morning, laying out by the pool, guaranteeing a Super Bowl victory for the Jacksonville Jaguars, reminiscent of Joe Namath by the pool in Miami back in the day for Super Bowl III. And he joins us here, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. Good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Well, that really is me, Mike. I'll be honest with you. I can share a story before we get started. I'm very comfortable amongst wealth, as you know.
Yes.
So, and when you take a trip, like we did, you kind of get frazzled. You forget where you put things. But I walked outside, and I remembered there was my Maserati this morning, parked where I left it. So I'm in good shape.
Oh, well, that's good.
That
you know,
issue.
You have
I'm sleeping
a
lot easier.
Right. Long night at the owner's meeting, sometimes your luxury car, yeah. Your luxury sports car, it doesn't end
right.
up where you thought you
right
parked
it.
Right
next to shots. I know you have to keep them distinct from one another, right?
Right. You know, there's a valet lot, which is where the other people park. Mine's right up here next to the, so I'm in good shape. I'm resting easy, and I'm ready to talk about football. So
all
we're
right.
in good shape.
Well, are we talking football? What gets accomplished, John? We know there's going to be some rules votes going on, but what do you expect this week to be about with the owners' meetings in Boca?
Well, it's a little... There's always two stories when you go and cover this sort of a thing. One is we'll be talking to Dave Caldwell at some point today, and we'll be talking to Shai Khan, I believe, tomorrow, and Gus at the owner, Gus at the breakfast tomorrow. So for our readers, for our market, there's Jaguars thing. There's talking to people about the Kelvin Beachum signing and about what's going on with the team. As far as the big picture with the league, that's really what we're about, obviously. As far as the big picture with the league, there's always some rules changes here, and this owner's meeting is really, there's the combine, which you guys saw, and it's the football, and that's really where you get together and talk football on the field, draft, getting ready for that new league year. Here it's a little more about the big picture of the league. You get owners, GMs, and head coaches, so it's really that, triumphant, if you will, the holy trinity from each team, if you will, that shows up, and that's where you get some of those stories coming out, and primarily it's the competition committee presenting rules, changes to ownership, and then they vote on it Wednesday, and the news comes out there. But you'll start to get a feel Tuesday for what's going to pass and for some of the higher-ups, being the owners' thoughts on these issues.
For the last year and year and a half, basically when the owners would get together, the questions were about the Patriots and Deflategate and what was going to happen with Tom Brady and how much – power should still remain in the hands of the commissioner. And if it wasn't a conversation about that, it was a conversation about when are we going to have the vote about who's going to L.A. And all that's
right.
off the table right now. Does it feel like it's a kind of a deep breath from all these guys, that it's a more relaxing type of meeting, that they're not having to deal with those big questions coming in?
A little bit. And, the press conferences are always a little weird because, you get X number of chances per year where the media sort of gets to question Roger Goodell on things. That was definitely the theme, the poor guy from the LA Times has been his theme for 20 years without a team. But those things are off the table, and I do get a sense that this is much more about the potential rules change for the two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties that I can get a player thrown out of a game. It feels more like a rules-ish owners meeting than a big picture off-field controversial owners meetings, which is what obviously Deflategate caused it to be all of last year. I don't think, Bill Belichick access points last year were always a big deal for that reason. You had a chance to talk to him about it. I don't think there'll be that sort of urgency this year.
John, with that proposed rules change with the two unsportsmanlike penalties, it would have resulted in very few players being ejected over the last several years. Is this just a cosmetic thing to, you know, maybe put guys on notice when they get that first one? Or do you think this is going to have a serious impact on the way games are both played and officiated?
I guess my question, and I haven't put a whole lot of thought into it because it doesn't seem, looking back, like the Jaguars really had that many guys or instances where you would think it'd be a huge issue for this team if you follow them. I can't think of a guy who really has that reputation on this team that I'd be real concerned about. I guess I'm not sure really the point of it. If it would only affect the two guys last year, I don't know what the trend is to sort of put this into action. Like, if you had a bunch of guys who were getting three personal foul penalties a game and you wanted to curb something, I guess I could see it. So I guess the answer to your question is it's probably more cosmetic. I just don't know that if it's in, we're going to be talking about it a whole lot next year. And really the only area might be, to me, what seems like a slippery slope, which is if you get a guy who gets one, maybe a flagrant early, and then gets what you would term a fluky personal foul penalty, because there are those that you get because you happen to hit the quarterback in the head with your hand as you go by, which everybody to the naked eye looks at and goes, well, they had to call it, but it's not really a thing where the guy's trying to hurt somebody. Then I think you could probably see guys penalized wrongly for that more than you would stopping anything. But that's just, you know, that's just my thought off the top of my head as you think about the rule.
Yeah, and it's more of a verbiage thing. Is the reason that these get that there would only be two or three ejections in the last couple of years, it's the difference between an official saying unsportsmanlike and unnecessary roughness. There are two different categories there. I don't know what goes into an official's head to determine this was unnecessary roughness and this was unsportsmanlike. To me, watching Odell Beckham Jr. do what he did to Josh Norman seemed pretty unsportsmanlike, but he was being called for unnecessary roughness. Right. I wonder if with that new thing in the officials' heads, if that does change the way they call those fouls too, whereas before it's just one or the other, it doesn't matter, it's 15 yards. Now it's if he gets two of these, he's out of the game.
And it could, and I guess the weird issue is this. I've always been told by anybody around the competition committee, and I worked for the Colts, Bill Polian and Tony Dungy both spent time on the committee in some capacity, either as a consultant or there or whatever. And the idea of most of their rules that they have pushed through has been, let's take judgment out as much as possible. And that's why they took out the force out rule, if you remember, because the officials had to judge on the fly whether the guy was going to come down in bounds or not. Now it's just if you're out of, you know, so the whole idea has been, let's make this as you're not going to have judgment, and let's make it as objective as possible so that it's officiated the same across the league. Well, now if you're asking people to interpret again, that's where you get controversy. So it's an odd thing in that sense to bring in when it's, you know, frankly, hasn't been something that I don't think a whole lot of fans sit there and go, man, there needs to be this rule because I'm seeing this. And that's usually where the best rules come about, is when it's a thing where everybody sort of knows it's the right thing to do, if that makes sense. I hope I explained that well.
Yeah, and they also emphasized the officials' ability to eject players even if they don't hit this threshold. And specifically saying Odell Beckham Jr., what he did last year, rose to the level where he could have been ejected simply for that play with nothing preceding it. And they just want to reemphasize to the officials that you have this power. Don't be afraid to use it.
Now you're back into an area where the league doesn't love, which is, does one official think something's egregious enough to do? I mean, that one obviously was obvious. Everybody watching it, there was that, if you're in a sports bar and saw it, the conversation would have immediately turned to anybody rational saying he should have been thrown out. So that was kind of a given. But now you get into gray areas where one official might see things one way, the other might see the other way. That's necessary as an official. Everybody sort of gets, well, that's what an official needs to do. But it's also something the league doesn't love because they like having things uniform across the board. So a little bit of a conflict there, or a little bit of a dilemma there, I guess. if you will.
All right, John, final thought for today, and that is that there was discussed last week that Roger Goodell and the NFL Players Association, the league and the Players Association may be close to removing Roger Goodell's oversight of the discipline process. The NFL has come back and said, well, if we do something along those lines, we're going to have to get a significant concession in bargaining. And one thing that's been mentioned is an extension of the current collective bargaining agreement for 1 or 2 years. When it first got signed, it was seen as very owner-friendly, and for the first couple of years. Do you get the sense, though, that it's starting to balance out a little bit as revenues rise and the salary cap continues to explode and all this money is available to the players? Is the feeling that the collective bargaining agreement, at least on that end, the economic end, is as good as it needs to be for both sides right now?
That's what it feels like. And again, I haven't done a canvassing of a whole lot of player agents. I don't talk to that many player agents. But you don't get a feel or a vibe that there is a tremendous amount of resentment from the player side that they're not making enough. I think exactly as a whole, I mean, in comparison to other sports, in comparison to what they should be. So I think what you just said makes sense. To extend it, the only thing that you really heard from the player side was this Goodell's power issue. So that would certainly seem like an equitable thing. Okay, let's extend it. We're in good shape here. Let's have some more labor peace in exchange for this one issue that you might want. It would be a little, it would certainly be major if that was conceded simply because of how much power Roger has had and how that has defined his tenure as commissioner so far. So that would be, if that happens, one of the bigger stories of the NFL all year.
Yeah, he is the Law and Order commissioner and was practically from his first day on the job. All right, John Osier, Jaguars.com. What do you have coming up on the website for the next few days?
Well, I was going to add to that. At the same time, for Roger's legacy, the longer you have labor peace, the better historically you're perceived.
Right.
So that's one where, if there's no lockout, if you have labor peace, that's a big deal for a commissioner. So that would be one exactly where you're talking about, okay, this is something worth giving if we're going to have more labor peace. So as far as we have on Jaguars.com, we'll have Jaguars.com live. I believe we're going at 1 today, and we'll have national writers on. The media's supposed to talk to Dave Caldwell around 12:15 today. Really the big day for us is tomorrow when Gus Bradley talks at the coach's breakfast at 7:15 in the morning, and then we expect to talk to Shad Khan tomorrow. So that's really the day that we expect the most news, reaction, the most liveliness on the site, if you will. So,
all right. Well,
good meeting.
Yeah, we'll look forward to your coverage and hopefully catch up with you to find out what Gus had to say at some point tomorrow. John, enjoy poolside down in Boca.
Hey, I got the Maserati revved up, and you're going to play a little polo. I got a date at 1:30. Big horse guy.
All right. So. We know you are. The equine inclined John Osier.
That's right.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, guys. Thank you.
You got it. We'll see you at John Osier on Twitter, of course. We'll catch up with him throughout the week live from the owners' meetings in Boca. Coming up, the state in football, the Honda drive around the NFL. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history on March 21st. First day of spring, by the way. Got that spring-like weather out there this morning. It was 48 degrees when I got in my car this morning. Happy spring, everybody. 1946, Kenny Washington signed with the Rams in 1946. Why was that significant? He was the first black player in the NFL since 1933 when George Preston Marshall, the former owner of the Redskins, led a movement to get black players out of the National Football League. They were allowed in and played, and the NFL was integrated right from its outset for the first 12 or 13 years or so, and then went a 13-year period without any until Kenny Washington signed with the Rams in the state in 1946. In 1984, the NFL owners at their owners' meeting passed their first ever infamous anti-celebrating rule. Here's an excerpt from the 1984 rule book, Rule 12, Section 2, on personal fouls, Article 14, Tony. There shall be no unsportsmanlike conduct. This implies to any act which is contrary to the generally understood principles of sportsmanship. Such acts specifically include, among other things, any prolonged, excessive, or premeditated celebration by individual players or groups Those players will be construed as unsportsmanlike conduct, and note spontaneous expressions of exuberance will be permitted. This came in because, once again, the Redskins had the Fun Bunch back in the day, where a bunch of them would get together and do a group high five in the end zone. And a fight broke out when the Dallas Cowboys took exception to it and tried to break it up. So the NFL said, enough of this stuff. In 1992 on this date, the second World League of American Football season kicked off. Tony, five countries were represented with teams in the World League of American Football. Can you go five for five on the countries that were represented? Yes, that had teams back in 1992.
Is this in the U.S.? Were they involved?
This is the World League of American Football, so it's worldwide.
I know nothing about this league.
Go with your first instinct there.
U.S.
Yes, that is one. Ding, ding, ding.
Canada.
Canada's two. I did not think you'd get Canada. That's good. World League of American Football.
Let's go UK.
Probably in the UK. Yeah. That's not a country, so give me some countries over there.
Britain?
Let's go with, yes, Great Britain. London Monarchs.
All right. Let's go Germany.
Germany, yes. The Frankfurt Galaxy.
Oh, there's a fifth country in here.
There's a fifth country in here.
I want to... Mexico.
Oh. Spain. Okay. España. The Barcelona Dragons. There you go. Tony went four out of five. I really didn't know if you'd get Canada or not. And then, Tony, finally, a famous birthday for this date, born on this date in 1937, one of the three men who won a Super Bowl as a head coach, as an assistant coach, and as a player. You know who those three guys are?
That did what now?
Pop quiz part two. That won Super Bowls as head coaches, assistant coaches, and players. Three guys have done it. One guy just went in the Hall of Fame.
I do not know.
Tony Dungy.
Okay.
Mike Ditka. And today's birthday boy, Tom Flores, who doesn't get nearly the credit
he
should. Right? Tom Flores won four Super Bowls as player coach or assistant coach. And he was the first minority head coach in professional football, the first Hispanic starting quarterback in the National Football League. And why is this guy not in the Hall of Fame? He's got two Super Bowls as a head coach, another as an assistant, another as a player. He's not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Tom Flores criminally underrepresented when it comes to the history of the National Football League, but he was born on this date in 1937. So happy birthday to Tom Flores. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The NFL owners' meetings in Boca Raton this week, New York Giants owner John Mara said that the most serious issue that will be discussed is the link between football and CTE, quote, and I don't think anything else comes close. Mara said that he was startled to a certain extent by the rise in concussions last season in the National Football League, with reported concussions up 32% from the year before. One last comment of interest from Mara, quote, I don't think we're hiding from it. Talking about the concussions. I know a lot of people have accused us of hiding from it in the past, but I certainly don't think that's the case anymore. It's something we have to keep pouring money into and keep studying because it's not going away. It sounds like a guy making a comment saying, yeah, we did hide from
we
it in the past.
We hid from it in the past. We're not hiding anymore.
Robert Griffin III spent the weekend in Cleveland visiting with the Browns, but left without a deal getting done. According to Pro Football Talk, the Browns are calling around to talk to people close to and that have worked with RG3, which would suggest that Cleveland is interested in him, but has some questions that need to be answered before they sign him. The Titans continue to indicate that they are heavily leaning towards selecting Laremy Tunsil with the number one overall selection. General Manager John Robinson said this weekend that 2014 first-round pick Taylor Lewan is the team's left tackle until he is not our left tackle, and then said that it would take a king's ransom to get Tennessee to trade out of that number one draft slot. Alex Marvez, attending the owners' meetings today, tweeted out in the last 10 minutes that the NFL on Fox has been told by a source that the league could play a regular season game in China by the year 2018, according to the talk going on down there at the owners' meetings. And finally, one more thing here. Richard Sherman isn't happy about who's deciding what is and isn't a catch in the NFL. He had this to say during an appearance on ESPN.
Why is it so hard to define what a catch is?
Because you got a bunch of suits doing it. Like I said before, you don't have a bunch of guys who's, you know, let Jerry Rice and Michael Irvin talk about it for about 20, 30 minutes, maybe Chris Carter, Randy Moss, let those guys have a roundtable discussion about what a catch should be and come up with a rule. I guarantee you it would be more effective than the rule they have now because those are pass catchers. Those are some of the best pass catchers we've had. I think it would be more straightforward and to the point, but you got a bunch of guys who've never played, who've never, I mean, they probably touched the football to hold it out or to shake somebody's hand and take a picture, but they've never played the game.
There we go. That is the Honda drive around the NFL.
Rich, I understand. Roger Goodell's an easy target. There are many things to be critical of him for. The fact that he didn't play football, you're going to criticize Belichick because he didn't play in the NFL? I mean, honestly, I don't hear that happening. I don't hear those criticisms. Bill Belichick doesn't know what he's doing. He's never played in this league. No, but he's pretty effective at what he does. You don't have to play in the league to be able to have an opinion. Oh, look, the catch rule has been a difficult one to define, okay? There was a poll of some of these receivers, and they said the most common refrain when answered should define a catch, 2 feet down in possession of the football. Okay, but for how long is the question? And the NFL, the only difference is the time element, right? They want you to make a football move, and they want you to or keep the ball if you're going to the ground through the act of catching the football. And they actually feel, Tony, that if you just define it as 2 feet down in possession of the ball, you get that split-second catch, you'd have a lot more guys headhunting trying to break up those plays, you know, those blink of an eye things, because how long is possession? How long do you need for possession? Are we going to go to the film every single time? Did he pull it into his body? Was it there for a millisecond? I don't know.
That's kind of the world the NFL's living in now.
That's what I'm saying.
If they change it, like the going to the ground rule makes complete sense to me, right? I understand why that's part of the rule for a catch, but the plays where a guy does catch the ball, get 2 feet down, if instead of taking it out of the referee's discretion, basically you say, this is the rule. 2 feet down with the ball, it's a catch. And whatever happens after that, if they fumble it, if it's one of those split-second things where it seems unfair even to call it a catch and a fumble, so be it. That's the rule, and we're not leaving it up to the officials anymore to determine what looks or doesn't look, what is a football move, what isn't a football move. It's too enigmatic.
But I think it's still going to be leaving it up to the officials because you're going to the officials are to determine what is possession. Did he have possession of the football?
I think hands on the ball, 2 feet on the ground should be constituted a catch to take it out of the official's hands as far as what is and isn't a catch
in that situation. I mean, I could easily say I'm standing there with 2 feet on the ground and the ball goes right through my hands. There's a moment where it touches both of my hands. Did I have possession? I mean, what is possession of the ball?
Well, like the Daniel Fells play on Sunday night last year where he caught the ball, turned his body, got hit, and he fumbled. That, to me, is a catch and a fumble.
I would agree with that.
And that's the rule. Right? That's the rule. And if you can see that on replay, you could see that. I'm not saying that they still wouldn't have to take a look at it, because clearly they would, but that would be pretty clear that that is a catch. I think if you see a bobble, that's a different story. But in that case, there wasn't a bobble. It was a catch. He got 2 feet down. It was just he didn't complete a football move, whatever the hell that is.
The point being, you and I have followed the game for a long time, right? We love the game. You and I can disagree or agree on various aspects of the rules. We didn't play the game. I don't think our input is any less valid than anybody else's opinion out there. I just think it comes to a point sometimes when Roger Goodell opens his mouth that players are going to rip him for no matter what he says. And, Roger Goodell is not completely incompetent. The NFL is rolling in cash right now, which is really his primary responsibility, make sure that the owners make a bunch of money, and therefore the players – they themselves will make a bunch of money because of the way the collective bargaining agreement is set up with them getting a certain percentage of the revenue.
Sure.
But nevertheless,
the things you say, like, it's words have to mean something. And a football move doesn't mean anything. There's no way to define football move. And that's where the whole thing about a catch or not a catch comes into play right now, because they're defining it with something that is indefinable.
Well, how do you define possession?
Two hands on the ball.
If it goes right through my hands, but there's a moment when I have two hands on the ball.
If there's no bobble, if the ball's still moving, that's a different story. That's not necessarily possession. But
so then it's not just two hands on the ball?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay.
But a football move tell me anything that constitutes a football move. I don't know a single thing in the NFL that constitutes a football move.
Sure you do.
I just know it's part of the definition of what a catch is or isn't.
That's not true.
Is Dez Bryant catching the ball, completely turning his body and reaching upfield with a football? Is that not a football move? How is that not?
Because it's not saying it isn't, but it got superseded by the act of going to the ground and not completing the other aspect of the rule, not completing the catch through the process of going to the ground.
I guess.
Right? I mean, look, again, I don't think, my point being, I don't think you can put Jerry Rice and all the half dozen best living receivers in a room and come out with a coherent rule that is going to satisfy everybody.
Well, I'm not saying their rule would be any better.
Well, that's kind of my
point.
The
NFL needs to take a look at it.
Oh, look, they should, and it doesn't seem like they're going to do much with it this year.
No.
But that's the whole point of Richard Sherman, is that it would be better because, quote, they played the game, therefore their rule would be better. Most of the rules that were made up of in football, probably bunches of them, came from guys that never played the game. Doesn't make them ineffective as far as rules go. All right, we'll put that aside. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday if you want to get in. 641-1010. More on the Jags coming your way in a moment. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. We're live here today at the 1010XL studios on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Fourth and two. Can the Jaguars survive? Garrard's going to run for the first down and a lot more. He is inside the 20. He's down to the 10-yard line.
This is what an athletic quarterback does for you. You get in this situation, you need a big play, he takes one look, it's not there, and he just runs it right up the middle, and he has the ability and the talent to run with it.
40 seconds to play in the wild card. The snap, the placement, the kick up on the way. Scobie drills it, and the Jaguars retake the lead 31-29 with 37 seconds to play.
Couple of the fantastic finishes in Jaguars lore today in honor of March Madness. We're asking you in the Tom Bush Family Dealership fan feedback question today to name your three most fantastic finishes in your time as a Jaguar fan, going back as far as you like in their history. And share your thoughts with us. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight coming up in about 15 minutes or so. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA. Guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Guns4Jax.com. That's guns, the number 4, JAX.com is the website. Or better yet, stop in on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Tony, you had in your drive around the NFL segment there, the NFL is considering playing a game in China by 2018.
Yeah.
We're not talking about, you know, some abstract 10 years from now. Hey, let's go to China and play a football game.
No. And according to Alex Marvez, a handful of teams have already expressed interest in playing there.
What does that tell you? It tells you that marketing trumps winning, right? I mean, ultimately, right? I mean, money, I mean, it is money, it's a business, right? And so you could sit there and say, would you like to be first in the ratings, Tony? Or would you like to make the most money as a radio station, as a broadcaster? Well, I think there are legitimate arguments on both sides of that. And as a football entity, you want to win a championship, right? But at the same time, knowing that you're not going to necessarily win a championship every year, and there are other facets to this thing. It's not like Shad Khan went to London with the Jaguars for greater competitive balance in the AFC South, right? He did it to market his team, help make them Europe's team in a sense, and to stabilize the economic situation here in Jacksonville. You hope that by going year after year after year, it becomes an advantage to you because you're acclimated to doing it, and the teams that come in to play you are not going to be as acclimated to doing it, and therefore you may have a bit of a home field edge, and you develop that with the fan base as well. China, that is a haul and a half. Now, I could see if you're going to play a game in China, maybe you do it the first week of the season, right? Something where you've got your travel, you have the final preseason game like that Thursday of the week prior, and you've got the time to go over there, get adjusted. I don't see this being a situation like London now where the Jags can fly in on a Thursday,
sure,
play that Sunday game. I think China's a little bit more of an ordeal to get this done.
And you got to wonder if that means that you're going to have two teams with a week two bye week. Or is, by 2018, do they plan on having two bye weeks in the schedule?
Well, we remember before the Houston Texans came into the league, Tony, when they put Cleveland back, when Cleveland lost their team, they became the Baltimore Ravens. The Browns got their franchise back in 1999. There were 31 teams in the league. And they were week one byes back then, right? So there were every week had a bye. Some team was on a bye. So it's possible. Certainly you would imagine playing in China would mean you would have to have the next week off to recuperate.
You would think.
You would assume that's the case. Keep in mind, they're playing in Mexico City. Probably a lot of people don't even realize that. This year and for the next 3 years, the Raiders and the Texans are playing in November of this year. And the Steelers are being mentioned as a franchise that may actually be giving up a home game. When you think of the franchises that are never going to give up a home game to these kind of things because they always sell out, they always have great fan support. You think of New England, you think of Green Bay, you think of Pittsburgh. At least that's what you hear.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also got some of those ownership groups are, you know, kind of aligned with the leading edge of ownership in the National Football League. And if you're going to have this and try to expand the game globally, you're going to at times have to step up and be a part of that. Pittsburgh did play a game. The Steelers played a game in Ireland. I don't think they were the home team in that one, but there's been talk that the Steelers could be the home team. Somebody's going to be the home team next year. Is it are the Texans? I think the Texans are the home team this year.
I believe so. I'm not sure.
So they're giving up one of their ones at Reliant, like the Jags are doing.
It would make, I mean, either one of those teams, I could see them giving up a home game. Honestly, Houston or Oakland to go play that game. But the way it read, it sounded like it was Houston.
Right. I think it is Houston as well. Boy, China, a long way away. But, and, you know, I'm sure there are wonderful areas of China, all that. I have no interest in going to Mexico right now.
No.
Is this before or after they pay for the wall, by the way, that we're going to do this? Is this contingent? Will the continuation of the series be contingent on them paying for the wall?
I'm not sure the wall will be high enough to block planes.
Well, I understand that, but
I know Houston probably could drive
if the check
from Houston
bounces,
to Mexico
though,
City.
If the check bounces, are we going to go to Azteca Stadium anyway and still say, hey, here we are? I mean, this first one, I don't think it matters because of the timing. It's a November deal here. I think
the Mexico City Texans.
I'm just saying, is President Trump going to allow the series to continue this year, or is this a trade imbalance here? Are they going to send the Mexican national soccer team to play, some high-level contest of theirs here in the States? I don't know. Maybe they will. Would that be a fair
trade?
They
usually do anyway.
Do they?
Yeah.
The ones that count?
Well, because, we talked to whoever it was out in L.A., and it was like the Mexican national team was like the third biggest draw in the city.
I want to say it was Ryan Abraham, but I don't think it was him. I was just talking with somebody this weekend who covers USC out there. Josh Webb, I think, was his name, and he mentioned Ryan Abraham, who's been with that the Fight On site out there. And it was somebody we had that you're absolutely right that we talked to in Southern Cal. This was going back a few years, but I asked him who are the top – the most popular teams, the most five popular teams in the city of Los Angeles. The Lakers were number one. The Mexican national soccer team was number two.
Yeah.
And said you could play in as big a venue as you could find and double it. And they would sell that thing out and they could play there every day. And they
Which
would sell
crazy.
Out.
Bigger
right.
than the Dodgers.
Bigger than the Dodgers, bigger than the Clippers. Now, the Clippers weren't as big back then. This is going back like maybe 6-7 years now, I think. As far as it goes, that
Bigger
always
than
stuck
the Angels.
With us.
The Angels were really
Anything.
Good at the time.
Absolutely, the LA Kings hockey, Southern Cal football. Tony, any of these things, it was the Lakers and the Mexican soccer team, and then I think it might have been the Dodgers, and then Southern Cal football might have been the next two, something like that.
And be careful, whoever the first team is that wants to give up a home game to China, just be prepared for the storylines of you're the team that's going to be moving to China. For 10 years.
I hope so. I hope they get that.
You were right about Mexico City. That will be a home game for Oakland.
Home game for Oakland.
Home game
so
for Oakland.
We were wrong about Mexico City then, I think. So the Raiders home game.
The Raiders will play at home, correct.
We have the two teams correct? The Texans are playing
Texans,
the Raiders?
They're playing the Raiders.
We were right about the game in Mexico City then.
So Oakland wants to move to Mexico City.
I don't have a great desire to go to Mexico City.
I have no desire
like,
to go to Mexico
I was
City.
Excited for a chance to go with the Jaguars to cover the game in London 2 years ago. It was very thrilling. I'd never been to Europe before. That was, what a great city and all that stuff. No, I had no desire to be in any part of Mexico. I have this image of Mexico that it's run by, drug cartels and that, you know, like the – the decapitated heads of their enemies are riding around on the back of tortoises.
Yeah, you've seen too much Breaking Bad.
Is that what it is? Well, that not a news report that I'm remembering?
Not sure. They're not playing the game in Juarez, but it is Mexico City. But
I understand.
I have no desire to go to Mexico.
I don't really have to go there myself. But
it's like one of the most polluted cities on the planet, too.
Man. But that's okay, because China's a lot cleaner with the air quality from what we understand. I don't know.
I don't know anything about China.
I know they spent a lot of money to put on a fantastic Olympic opening ceremony a few years
back.
They did that. It was spectacular. So perhaps they do the same.
And that game in Mexico City is going to be a Monday night football game.
Is that right?
Correct, yeah.
All right, well, that probably makes more sense. They actually did one. Was it a regular season game that they did? I want to say it was Arizona and San Francisco.
Yeah, that was a game, yeah.
That was a Monday nighter as well, right, down in Mexico City.
That was like 2005 or something like that.
Was it then? I'm vague on the time frame, but sometime in the last 15 years sounds about right as far as that goes. All right. Again, Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday, 641-1010 if you want to get in on the other side. Coming back with the fan feedback spotlight asking you fantastic finishes in Jaguar history. Which three top your personal list? We'll do that next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
59-yard attempt. Podlush will hold it. Jeremy Cain, the snapper. Scobie sweeps the leg. 59 yards away! He's got it! Jacksonville wins!
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I told the story a few times. Jags lost. I want to say it was a Monday nighter. Might have been a Sunday nighter against the Steelers. Like a low-scoring game, like a 10-9 kind of game. But at the end of that game, as we would lead the press box at the time, depending on what our duties were with any given station, you'd lead the press box, you'd take the elevator downstairs, and a lot of times watch the last 2 minutes of the game down in what's called the team meeting room, with the big gathering place where they show film or just have meetings with the entire squad. So we're in there waiting for the post game, because that's where Gus Bradley will do his press conference, the starting quarterback, and on and on. And Scobie, I want to say, Tony, had a chance to kick like a 60-yard field goal.
Yeah.
At the end of that game to win it. And the Pittsburgh media is down there. And I don't think Scobie had been in the league all that long at the time. And I remember saying out loud, he can hit this, something to that effect. And they just, come, 60 yards. Are you kidding me? And he missed it wide right.
Yeah.
And tons of leg on Josh Scobie. And that one certainly accurate from 59 yards. To beat the Colts, maybe your favorite fantastic finish, but certainly throw your votes out there on Facebook and on Twitter this morning. We go to the phones right now at 641-1010, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. What are your three favorite fantastic finishes in Jaguar games across their history? And that's out of deference to the fantastic finishes we saw in March Madness over the weekend. Let's go to Ken next up here on 1010XL. Good morning, Ken. Ken. What's up? Hello? No.
Hello?
All right, no Ken. Let's not go to Ken. Let's go to Twitter, Tony.
Okay.
How about that? Did Ken tweet at us this morning? And if so, let's please tell me what he said.
I have not seen Ken's tweet, but I do have one here from Duval Doom, who said number three for him is that 59-yarder you just heard. Number two, the Hail Mary. And number one, the comeback win over the stupid Giants from Irish Jaguar. Number three, Myers beats the Ravens this year. From number two, Scobie beat the Colts with that 59-yarder. And Garrard Hail Mary beats the Texans. From Eric, Blake DeHearns versus the Bills in London this year. Number two, Scobie Colt killer for 59 yards. And the Garrard Hail Mary, number one for Eric. From Javi, we got number three, the 50-burger on the Colts this year. Number two, Jay Smoove's touchdown in Denver in the playoff run there. And the Scobie 50-yarder, 59-yarder, maybe you mistyped there.
I think that's
from
what you're saying.
Stoff Prime, in no order, Thursday Night Football, Gold Rush Jags. I'm sure that's because he was here. The Bills against the Bills in Wembley again this year. Stoff was there for that one. And the David Garrard Hail Mary against the Texans. From Eric, number three, the 07 Pittsburgh playoff game. Number two, 59-yard field goal to beat the Colts. And number one, Hail Mary, saw the last two in person. And from Union Jack's Joe, Scobie from 59, Garrard Hail Mary. and the Allen Hurns catch at Wembley this year.
All right, in the interest of full disclosure, when Duval Doom tweeted about the stupid Giants, he misspelled stupid.
He did. He said,
so,
stops Giants, and then followed up with, damn it, stupid.
Duh. Somebody might have been doing a voice tweet or something like that. I don't know, but oops on you. We think we got Ken in Arlington back on the line. Ken, good morning. You're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
What's up?
Hey, well, my best memory of the Jaguars, I've been in town for about 35 years, and one of the best things that ever happened here is having the team, but early on in their seasons, it was either the second or third. We were traveling on I-75 coming back into town, and I think we were playing Atlanta. May or may not be correct, but Morton Anderson was supposed to kick a short field goal to win the game, and he actually missed it. And we won the game. I think that got us into the playoffs. I thought that was amazing because we were on the highway, and unbelievable amount of cars were flashing lights and honking horns on the highway doing 70 miles an hour. So we had an awful lot of fans out there traveling that day.
Nice. Ken, I appreciate it. I don't recall that one, Tony. Do you? No, I'm kidding. This is what it sounded like.
It is from 31 yards. There's the snap. The placement, the kick is up. It's on the way. And it's no good. It's no good.
Oh, my God.
It's no good. Morton Anderson is missed. And the Jaguars are going to the playoffs.
Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, the end of the 1996 regular season. And just picture now Ken banging his horn and flashing his lights and driving around going cuckoo for Cocoa
Man,
Puffs.
I hope we get one of those runs against just a playoff run.
In 2007 was so good.
Just get in. It's so much fun in this city when they're in.
What a great week leading up to the game.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And I talk about this all the time. But when people like from out of town ask me, you know, that whole idea of this being a college town, right? And is it really an NFL city or is it a college town? And I always go back to that run for the Jags in 2007 when the Gators are getting ready to play for a national championship. And I didn't hear a word about it while the Jaguars were still alive. While they made that run, went up and beat Pittsburgh, we're going to play the undefeated Patriots. Nobody was talking about the Gators playing for a national championship in this city. It was all Jags all the time. It was the only story in this city until they lost, and I hope we get another one of those soon.
I mean,
it is so much fun.
I've never seen, until we made these Jaguars Today t-shirts, which I am modeling today, by the way. It looks very good on me. Until we made those, I don't think we'd ever seen a more popular item of clothing in Jacksonville, other than those white Patriots suck t-shirts. All it had was, they were black and white, Tyler. They had a black and white 1010 logo on it, and it just said Patriots suck. And that's all the t-shirt was. And we only had like 100 of them. We made this a little.
Was there a certain reason? Or
there were fights breaking out on who wanted these t-shirts while they were playing the undefeated Patriots
in
the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they had beaten Pittsburgh, so we're like, hey, let's put some of our marketing budget to use here. Let's whip out 100 white and black t-shirts, right? Just
right.
White, plain white t-shirts with just black. Get them out there. We had to turn them around quickly, right? You don't know if you're going to be advancing. And as it turned out, of course, they gave the Patriots a run for their money in that game. And shall I mention Dennis Northcutt's name? I don't feel like I need to, but I did.
There are kids in this city that are turning 10, 11, 12 years old that
didn't get to experience that.
And even if they were alive for it, they didn't know what it felt like to have their team in that kind of moment. They don't know what that feels like. And for all the fans who do remember, you should be desperate to get it back. There's nothing else like being alive in the NFL playoffs, especially if you think your team has a chance on a week-to-week basis. So hopefully the Jags are building towards that because it is awful sweet in the city when they're good.
By the way, if someone has one of those original Patriots suck t-shirts, I would love for them to tweet us a photo of that. Seriously, I'd love to feature that on the Jaguars Today page on Facebook tomorrow. If you could send that along at 1010XL, Fat Tony at 1010XL, Tyler, or at MD_1010XL. Here are a few coming in on Facebook. Skyler went with David Garrard to Glover Quinn to Mike Thomas for the Hail Mary. That was his number one. Josh Scobie's 59-yarder. And then, oops, this is how memory can fail you. Byron to Matt Jones in the back of the end zone to beat the Bills at the end of regulation in week one of that year. That was Ernest Wilford, as we mentioned, who was on the receiving end of that. Ryan went with Morton Anderson, doinking the field goal. Scobie beating the Colts. People love that 59-yarder.
Well, it was so awesome because they took a timeout, and TV went to the timeout. And so while the TV was at timeout, the stands were chanting Scobie. Like, it was that kind of moment, Scobie, Scobie, for about 2.5 minutes, and then he made the thing. And then, you know, Jackson's got the ball, and he's running out and celebrating with him and that whole thing. I mean, it was just an awesome moment.
It was pretty awesome. Not as significant as some other. I would still put, like, the playoff runs.
Oh, me too.
You know, the game against Denver, the one against Pittsburgh in 2007 up ahead of it. But it's all personal preference. And the Chris Hudson one, getting mentioned by a lot of folks. Ryan mentioned that. Chad Cox went with the Hail Mary, Garrard to Mike Thomas, Morton Anderson, and the Monday night block field goal against the Steelers that we're talking about. And Mike Peterson followed up, not that Mike P, Chris Hudson blocking the field goal. The Saints, the lateral fest, which we mentioned with Jeff Prosser, which was crazy. It's one of those, you know, Cal-Stanford plays, and then they miss the damn extra point.
Yep.
I mean, that is about as unlikely. It's certainly one of the more memorable ones, and it worked in the Jags' favor. Ultimately with the missed extra point, but what a crazy one that was. I wonder what the point spread was on that particular day. And then also Mike mentioned MJD taking a knee against the Jets, which allowed Scobie to come in and take the game winner. He went down at the 1 yard line. Imagine if Scobie had missed that one. Right down. That would have been the most horrendous decision, but it is a wise decision, as we've seen over the years at times, to go down in bounds and let that clock run down and not give the other team a chance to come back if you're confident in your kicker to hit a chip shot. So there you have. Doom just sent me a Twitter middle finger, by the way, for pointing out that he misspelled stupid. Don't misspell stupid, and you won't have to worry about it, Doom. Come on. We expect more out of a three-time co-host of Jaguars Today than we're getting out of you today. All right, so if somebody's got one, I want if somebody's got the original Patriots Suck T-shirt in honor of the Jaguars taking on the undefeated Patriots in the 2007 playoffs. I guess that would be January 2008. Love to see a photo of that one. And please send that along if you can. Thanks to Johnny O for joining us today from the owners' meetings. He'll check in tomorrow morning. Gus Bradley's going to speak before we ever get on the air. Shad Khan will speak at some point tomorrow as well. We'll hear what John's reaction is to whatever Dave Caldwell has to say, as he'll keep us posted along with Ryan O'Halloran with what's going on at the owners' meetings over the next couple of days down in Boca Raton. That'll do it for us. Welcome back, Fat Tony, on this Monday, brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, for the Milk Association, because somebody apparently spilled some in here on Friday and then didn't clean it up. My goodness. Although you do get acclimated. I'm going to give a warning to XL Primetime. Once you come in, acclimate yourself to the lovely aroma and then just go with it and stay with it. Don't be going in and out.
Don't leave.
Don't leave.
If you leave for any amount of time and come back, it's like you got to start over.
You got to start fresh again, and you're going to be disappointed in yourself for your decision-making. So XL Primetime. Coming up next, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off for Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Garrard steps up, fires, Mike Sims, Walker, knocked down.
Oh, he caught it! Oh, unbelievable! Mike Thomas, touchdown Jags! Ball game, 50 yards! Whoa.
You guys have a good day. Peace.